WYPR is here to keep you connected to your community. And as our communities change amid the coronavirus pandemic, that connection is more important than ever before. Member support makes it possible. And if you can, we hope you'll help us out. If you're a sustaining member, consider increasing your monthly pledge or become a new member with a first-time gift. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link. And thanks.
This is Anibon Basu with your Monday Morning Economic Report. According to economist Joe Lavorgna, chief economist for the Americas at Natixis, the level of total net worth to income recently achieved an all-time high. What does this mean? This means that Americans have collectively become richer largely because of the appreciation of financial assets like stocks and mutual fund holdings. So while incomes haven't gone up very much, financial wealth has. According to Lavorgna, recent Federal Reserve data indicate the total net worth for households recently stood at nearly $99 trillion. At the same time, there was a bit less than $15 trillion in disposable income for households as of the fourth quarter. If one divides that total net worth figure by the disposable income statistic, one would compute a figure of 6.8. A previous high occurred during the first quarter of 2006, just before the housing market bubble began to burst. Another cyclical peak occurred during the first quarter of 2000, as the dot-com bubble of the 1990s was just beginning to implode. In other words, based on the ratio of net worth to disposable household income, asset prices are very high, which may set the stage for a rapid decline in asset prices sometime in the future. That process may already have begun. For WYPR, I'm Anibon Basu. This is Anibon Basu with your Tuesday Morning Economic Report. There has been a lot of discussion recently regarding appropriate immigration policy in America. As of last year, nearly half of Americans agreed that immigration makes crime worse. Of course, economists and other analysts don't simply rely upon perceptions. We study the data. There have correspondingly been many studies regarding the impact of immigrants in America, including along the dimension of crime. As reported by the New York Times, one example of the work is a large-scale collaboration between four universities led by Robert Adelman, a sociologist at the University of New York at Buffalo. Researchers compared immigration rates with crime rates for more than 200 metropolitan areas over the last several decades. A significant majority of areas have many more immigrants today than they did in 1980 and fewer violent crimes. Specifically, in 136 metropolitan areas, almost 70% of those studied, the immigrant population increased between 1980 and 2016, while crime remained stable or declined. The 10 places with the largest increases in immigrants all had lower levels of crime in 2016 than they did in 1980. For WYPR and my esteemed producer, Bob White, I'm Anibon Basu. This is Anibon Basu with your Wednesday Morning Economic Report. As many economists have been predicting, the number of American families without health insurance has begun to rise. True, the present share of Americans without health insurance remains near historic lows several years after the Affordable Care Act extended coverage to millions of people. At the same time, the cost for many people to purchase a health plan if they don't get one from a job or the government is higher than ever. As indicated by Bloomberg, there's plenty of evidence that having health insurance is a fine thing. People with coverage spend less out of pocket on medical care and are less likely to become bankrupt. They also see the doctor more frequently and receive more preventive care. They're less likely to suffer depression and more likely to tell researchers that they feel healthy. Many studies indicate that having health insurance reduces the likelihood of death in any given year. But despite all those benefits, nearly 28 million Americans under the age of 65 were uninsured in 2016, about 10% of the population, according to the Kaiser Family Foundation. The most common reason? The cost of insurance is too high, and costs are rising, with some insurers having left the marketplace and others sharply raising their premiums. For WYPR, I'm Anibon Basu. This is Anibon Basu with your Thursday Morning Economic Report. Recently, authorities began turning off the power at Seoul, South Korea's City Hall by 8 p.m. each Friday. This isn't being done because of some threat coming from the North or even to reduce public utility bills. This is being done to discourage employees from working overtime at night. Next month, the shutdown will move forward to 7 p.m. As indicated by CNN Money, working long hours represents a way of life in South Korea where it's typical to start early in the morning and finish late at night. Japan also wrestles with the social consequences of overwork. Government employees are especially known for maintaining punishing work schedules. In South Korea, they work approximately 1,000 hours more per year than the average in other developed nations, according to results of a recently released government survey. That translates into 20 hours of additional work per week. By setting the shutdown on Friday evenings, officials in Seoul hope to set an example for private companies to endeavor to create more work-life balance. But enforcing the new routines may not be easy. The government had previously pushed for lights to be turned off at 6 p.m. on Fridays, but that produced many requests for exemptions. For WYPR and my esteemed producer Bob White, I'm Aniban Basu. This is Aniban Basu with your Friday Morning Economic Report. If you are like most people, one of the last items you want to see in your mailbox is an unexpected notice from the Internal Revenue Service. Those notices are rarely accompanied by good news. One of the most frightful possibilities is the announcement that you will soon be audited. It's not that you've done anything wrong necessarily, but an audit implies spending endless hours collecting old bank statements, pay stubs, and other information indicating income and expenditures. Last year, the IRS audited about 1 in 160 individual tax returns. That translates into 0.62% of individual returns audited during the fiscal year that ended September 30th of last year. That was the lowest proportion since 2002 and the sixth consecutive year that audits have declined. This is largely the result of staff reductions at the IRS. As indicated by the Wall Street Journal, that agency has lost nearly a third of its enforcement employees since 2010, when it audited one out of every 90 individual returns. The audit rate has declined most for high-income households. In 2017, the IRS audited 4.4% of returns with income of $1 million or higher, less than half the audit rate of 2015. For WYPR, I'm Aniban Basu. This is Aniban Basu with your Monday Morning Economic Report. According to economist Joe Lavorgna, chief economist for the Americas at Natixis, the level of total net worth to income recently achieved an all-time high. What does this mean? This means that Americans have collectively become richer largely because of the appreciation of financial assets like stocks and mutual fund holdings. So while incomes haven't gone up very much, financial wealth has. According to Lavorgna, recent Federal Reserve data indicate the total net worth for households recently stood at nearly $99 trillion. At the same time, there was a bit less than $15 trillion in disposable income for households as of the fourth quarter. If one divides that total net worth figure by the disposable income statistic, one would compute a figure of 6.8. A previous high occurred during the first quarter of 2006, just before the housing market bubble began to burst. Another cyclical peak occurred during the first quarter of 2000, as the dot-com bubble of the 1990s was just beginning to implode. In other words, based on the ratio of net worth to disposable household income, asset prices are very high, which may set the stage for a rapid decline in asset prices sometime in the future. That process may already have begun. For WYPR, I'm Aniban Basu. This is Aniban Basu with your Tuesday Morning Economic Report. There has been a lot of discussion recently regarding appropriate immigration policy in America. As of last year, nearly half of Americans agreed that immigration makes crime worse. Of course, economists and other analysts don't simply rely upon perceptions. We study the data. There have correspondingly been many studies regarding the impact of immigrants in America, including along the dimension of crime. As reported by the New York Times, one example of the work is a large-scale collaboration between four universities led by Robert Adelman, a sociologist at the University of New York at Buffalo. Researchers compared immigration rates with crime rates for more than 200 metropolitan areas over the last several decades. A significant majority of areas have many more immigrants today than they did in 1980 and fewer violent crimes. Specifically, in 136 metropolitan areas, almost 70% of those studied, the immigrant population increased between 1980 and 2016, while crime remained stable or declined. The 10 places with the largest increases in immigrants all had lower levels of crime in 2016 than they did in 1980. For WYPR and my esteemed producer, Bob White, I'm Anibon Basu. This is Anibon Basu with your Wednesday morning economic report. As many economists have been predicting, the number of American families without health insurance has begun to rise. True, the present share of Americans without health insurance remains near historic lows several years after the Affordable Care Act extended coverage to millions of people. At the same time, the cost for many people to purchase a health plan if they don't get one from a job or the government is higher than ever. As indicated by Bloomberg, there's plenty of evidence that having health insurance is a fine thing. People with coverage spend less out-of-pocket on medical care and are less likely to become bankrupt. They also see the doctor more frequently and receive more preventive care. They're less likely to suffer depression and more likely to tell researchers that they feel healthy. Many studies indicate that having health insurance reduces the likelihood of death in any given year. But despite all those benefits, nearly 28 million Americans under the age of 65 were uninsured in 2016, about 10% of the population, according to the Kaiser Family Foundation. The most common reason? The cost of insurance is too high, and costs are rising, with some insurers having left the marketplace and others sharply raising their premiums. For WYPR, I'm Anibon Basu. This is Anibon Basu with your Thursday morning economic report. Recently, authorities began turning off the power at Seoul, South Korea's City Hall by 8 p.m. each Friday. This isn't being done because of some threat coming from the North or even to reduce public utility bills. This is being done to discourage employees from working overtime at night. Next month, the shutdown will move forward to 7 p.m. As indicated by CNN Money, working long hours represents a way of life in South Korea where it's typical to start early in the morning and finish late at night. Japan also wrestles with the social consequences of overwork. Government employees are especially known for maintaining punishing work schedules. In South Korea, they work approximately 1,000 hours more per year than the average in other developed nations, according to results of a recently released government survey. That translates into 20 hours of additional work per week. By setting the shutdown on Friday evenings, officials in Seoul hope to set an example for private companies to endeavor to create more work-life balance. But enforcing the new routines may not be easy. The government had previously pushed for lights to be turned off at 6 p.m. on Fridays, but that produced many requests for exemptions. For WYPR and my esteemed producer Bob White, I'm Anibon Basu. This is Anibon Basu with your Friday morning economic report. If you are like most people, one of the last items you want to see in your mailbox is an unexpected notice from the Internal Revenue Service. Those notices are rarely accompanied by good news. One of the most frightful possibilities is the announcement that you will soon be audited. It's not that you've done anything wrong necessarily, but an audit implies spending endless hours collecting old bank statements, pay stubs, and other information indicating income and expenditures. Last year, the IRS audited about 1 in 160 individual tax returns. That translates into 0.62% of individual returns audited during the fiscal year that ended September 30th of last year. That was the lowest proportion since 2002 and the sixth consecutive year that audits have declined. This is largely the result of staff reductions at the IRS. As indicated by the Wall Street Journal, that agency has lost nearly a third of its enforcement employees since 2010, when it audited one out of every 90 individual returns. The audit rate has declined most for high-income households. In 2017, the IRS audited 4.4% of returns with income of $1 million or higher, less than half the audit rate of 2015. For WYPR, I'm Anibon Basu.